This is Desiree Scales with the High Velocity Radio Show. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I actually got to go to the CEO Council. We were broadcasting live. I got to try on some Google glasses and experiment with them, and it was
get out of here.
It was awesome. It was
really
a great time. Yep.
What did you like about Google Glass?
It's just I didn't get to do too much with it, but it's basically like having an iPhone on your face. So that's nice. It's nice right there.
Yeah, it's about right. Wearing an iPhone on your face. I think
exactly.
That's probably the best way to describe that experience. Did you see the text messages in front of your eyes?
Or I saw the text messages. I saw directions. So like you can do a map. And I even believe you can go down. He was talking about how you can go down and sort of go to, like, you know, the street view for Google Maps.
Yeah.
Well, they have a thing where now where you put it on your eye and then you can sort of walk around and, like, turn your head and you're, like, going around the street. Like, you're actually walking down the street. So that's pretty cool.
Whoa, I have not seen that yet. Wow, well, that's pretty cool. Well, I've been excited about this show for about 3 weeks.
I know you've been talking about it.
I know. I've been talking about this show because it's one of my favorite topics. And we're going to be talking today about social selling. And I've got three rock star guests. Or can we still say that in 2013,
yes, you can
rock
say,
star?
Yes,
is that
you
still
can.
Pertinent? Okay. So we've got three rock star guests. And we're going to kick it off with Barb Giamanco from Socially Centered Selling.
Hey
and
there.
She's going to talk to us about sales and tell us, what have you been up to, Barb? It's not like I haven't seen you recently. We just saw each other at an event, Shake-Off.
That's right. All three of us were at the
Social
Shake-Off.
Yeah, and Sandra Bean is here
in the
studio. We've got a guest on call, though. He's coming in just a second. But, Barb, what's going on?
Well, just selling as usual. You know, had a lot of fun at the conference. It was great learning about, you know, how people are thinking about social and how it impacts the business.
Yes.
And certainly I was excited to see that more people are starting to talk about how social impacts all pillars of the business.
Uh-huh.
Service, sales, marketing, you know, community, PR, communication, even finance. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was great. And Sander, we actually, all three of us had dinner together.
That's right.
Social Shake-Up. And
that was a lot of fun. Yeah, you're right, Barb. It was amazing. I saw somebody there from the Federal Reserve. Now, you know, if the Federal Reserve is getting involved with social, that we're past the trend phase, or, well, maybe this might be big phase someday.
I don't know. Is it a good idea that they get involved?
The woman who was there was very passionate, I'll tell you.
Maybe they're all shutting down to tweet this week
something.
Or
cool.
Learn social media.
That's
just
right.
Kidding. But
you know, the other thing that I really loved about it is that there are so many people. In fact, I was just saying to Anthony before we got started that it was so nice to get a chance to talk to him. I have followed his blog. I have followed his interviews for years. So the other fun thing I thought about the conference was really cool is so many online relationships that I have built with folks on Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn got the opportunity to hang out with them at the conference. So it just goes to show that, you know, those relationships in person are pretty powerful.
And we do have Anthony Anarina. He's standing, he's waiting in Ohio on the phone with us to bring him into this conversation. Anthony, I wish you were here.
I wish I was, minus your horrid and horrible traffic.
Yeah, exactly. I just experienced that myself, getting into the
Atlanta's
studio.
Atlanta's lovely outside of the Outer Belt.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. I don't think you get too much traffic where you're at, do you?
No, Columbus, Ohio is a piece of cake.
Exactly. And Anthony is a prolific blogger. Yeah, he blogs every day, right?
Every day, he was just saying.
Every day.
Unbelievable.
And a newsletter on Sunday.
Yeah. And his newsletter, we all, you know, get that newsletter.
Yeah, it's all good stuff.
So there's a lot of things going on. So let's cut to the chase here and talk about sales and social. And, you know, Barb, how has the sales landscape changed?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that the technology has continued to evolve. So social networks like LinkedIn, you know, and then Twitter started to impact the ways that people could find information about products and services, and they could do, you know, homework in advance, check brands out, peer reviews, you know, read blog posts and all that sort of thing. And I think in large part what that has done, it's forced sales folks to start to think about how they approach prospects and support customers in new ways.
Yeah. Anthony, you and I took a class by our friend Chris Brogan about blogging. And tell us the role of blogging in sales from your perspective.
It's interesting. There's a lot of people that that say salespeople should have their own blogs, and I'm not one of those people. Mm-hmm. I'm not a terrific editor myself, and I can't imagine salespeople spending their time writing without having some sort of support. So I think that belongs to marketing, but I think that a company should have blog posts, and I think that they should be well-written, and that content should really serve their clients' need wherever they happen to be in their buying cycle. So what I mean by that is that early when somebody is reading about your company, you may need some content that says, if you're not dissatisfied with your results, maybe you should be, because here are some results that other companies are getting, so there's a gap between where you are and maybe where you want to be. And that creates the case for change. So some content should look like that. And if salespeople can point to that content, it's good. And then the next stage that buyers enter into is sort of this recognition of needs. And I think especially people that sell B2B and complex sales, there's a lot of things to consider as you start looking at your needs. What's really going to solve that need? So I think blogs are a terrific place to write about how do you think about what it is that you're buying. And then buyers go through two more stages real quick, the evaluation of options. So blogs are a terrific way to say, here's what differentiates us from our competitors, not to bash your competitors, but to say there's a difference between our view of the world and how this should work and how it should work in your business and our competitors. So you can start thinking about what those trade-offs might look like. And then finally, blogs are also great for a resolution of concerns. Whenever anybody buys anything, at the end of that cycle, they have fear pop up because it looks like risk, it looks like uncertainty, and testimonials and case studies and even things that you can put in a blog post like a worksheet to say, here's what an ROI might look like, can help resolve those issues. So I think blogs are just terrific because in long form, you know, at 500 words, you can do a lot of good content that help the buyer wherever they happen to be.
Okay, that's definitely an interesting perspective. And we have Sander Bean from AT&T here today.
Yeah, so Anthony, it's interesting you say that because just to give you a quick rundown of my background, I kind of got into this business quite by chance. And what I mean by that is I was looking to try to approach my business-to-business customer, Fortune 87 customer being approached by a Fortune 8, to give you an idea of the scale we were talking about. And I was trying to figure out how to do this, and I actually couldn't find the content that I thought that would talk to my customer, and so I ended up creating it. And that sort of goes against what you were saying with the salesperson creating the content. And I understand what you mean, because one thing that I've found in this long journey that I've been on is it nearly killed me creating the content, moving the content, and doing the sales job all at once. And for me, it was just a way to get involved and really understand how it might all work together as an ecosystem.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. It's just totally different. And I think everybody's situation is different. Barb, what about you?
Well, I have to agree with Anthony that, you know, if you don't feel like you're a good writer or maybe you don't have the time, taking on a blog may not be the thing to do, just like I just don't think you just start a LinkedIn group, right? There's so much you have to think about. What I do recommend often to sales folks that we're working with, though, is, you know, in addition to your own blog and sharing that content, that being the blog of the company, I mean, find an industry blog or two that's very relevant to your own industry and perhaps comment on occasion on various posts so that you do have the opportunity to expand your visibility, maybe demonstrate a little bit of credibility in your field. But, you know, taking on a blog, and this is something that we all do, and you know, I do this for a living, and I don't blog every day. So, I mean, I'm, like, tremendously impressed that Anthony can do that, given what I know about him and everything else he does.
Yeah.
It's a lot for somebody to take on.
Yeah, it is. But you mentioned LinkedIn groups.
Sure.
So how can businesses leverage LinkedIn groups?
Well, they could use it as an opportunity to create some thought leadership, invite their customers. That could be a place where they support customers. As Anthony was talking about on the blog, sharing information and education and tools and things that might be beneficial. And I am not one of those people who says, yes, just run out and start a group. Because just like a blog and everything else, you have to think strategically about it and who's going to support it. It takes resources and time and energy to get people to weigh in and, you know, answer questions and things like that. I know for myself, I use groups as a way to help contribute to the learning that's hopefully taking place in those groups.
Okay.
And then the byproduct is people notice and they want to connect or they may reach out to me.
Right. And Sander, I know LinkedIn has been a big part of your strategy.
Yeah, well, what happened to me, and again, my story is much more from an organic perspective because I was figuring a lot of these things out in a vacuum, and I've only just recently met all these great resources and people who are involved in this, in doing this. But what happened to me was I started blogging, and I had all this great information, and I was trying to figure out how to get it to my customers, so I started emailing it to them.
Email? Yeah. Who uses email anymore?
Well, yeah. So it was getting deleted with everything else that I was sending to the client. I'm sure that Anthony and Barb can relate to this foible on my part. But I started looking at different ways of how can I get in touch with these folks. And then I did something even worse. I just tried to connect with these people on LinkedIn and figured, you know, you could be my friend because I got something I want to show you. And that was equally disastrous. But I came to the same sort of conclusion, and just for the reasons that Barb was talking about, which I think are right on, which is, you know, hanging out where those people hang out, exist where they live, and offer help and good information where they are going for that help and good information.
That's great. And speaking of email, and you know I'm kind of joking about the whole email thing because I think email can be a very powerful tool, especially Absolutely. When you're consistent with it every week, like Anthony. You know, Anthony, I read your newsletter faithfully every Sunday morning. You know, I really enjoy it.
Thank you. Comes right in after Chris's, right?
Yeah, right. Chris's first, right? So tell me about your newsletter, and I know you just started that this year, right?
I did, just this year.
What
A couple
prompted
quick
you?
Comments, though, on yeah. what Sanders added to this. I still think email is great, even if you wrote a blog post and you email it. And I'll tell you what one distinction I recognize from my world and from having clients is that if you wrote a blog post and you've got something there and you send an email, if you put just 10 words or 15 words in front of it to say, I thought you'd be interested in this because it will help you with this problem, mm-hmm. then you can get people to come and look at it. But you have to tell them why you're sending it to them. And I think the difference between somebody in Sanders' role who's really a salesperson and marketing doing this is that you have some insight and you know people. And when you know them, you can send that and get it looked at. When marketing sends it, it's spam and we delete it, right?
Right.
And that's sort of the thing about email. Desiree, you were going to ask about the newsletter. I'll let you finish your question, and maybe I can riff on that and
yeah.
tie that together.
What made you decide to start a newsletter?
It's intimate. It goes into mm-hmm. your email box. And the one thing that we probably know more than anything now is that all of us are living on our mobile device, right? And
That's
that
right.
email
mm-hmm.
is with you on your mobile device wherever you are, and it's going to show up. So it's in – mine comes out in 14-point font, so it's big. You can read it on the small screen. And that's where most of the people are doing most of their reading. And I think that's one of the powers of using email as a sales rep is that you can be about 100% certain that your client received that email because their email is with them in their pocket every minute of the day. And if you haven't had the experience of sitting across from a client and having them continue to look at their phone, you will. It's guaranteed. They are attached to their device just like the rest of us. So it does reach them. We know it does.
Right. Exactly. So I'm going to throw this back over to Barb. Social selling. Define that. What does that mean?
Well, I think you'll get a different definition depending on who you ask.
Yeah, I think so.
From my perspective, it's really more of a way of thinking and a process. I tend to think of using social as an integrated part of your sales process, whether it's networking or prospecting, you know, doing that pre-sales call research, you know, keeping customers informed, all that sort of thing. It doesn't replace great selling skills, however.
Right.
And it's not the only thing. In fact, that concerns me about a lot of the discussion around social selling. It's as if LinkedIn is going to sell the deal for you.
Mm.
And I'm pretty good with this stuff, but I've never closed a deal simply from one conversation on LinkedIn.
Right.
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 So that's how I think of social selling. But more importantly, I think of it as a, sort of a behavioral shift. In other words, I want salespeople to think about the person and the relationship. So that has always been important in selling. Now I think we lose some of that with technology. People just – one of the things that caught my attention when Anthony was talking is – and the reason why I think – his messages work so well is they are customized, they're personalized, and they're relevant.
Right.
And so many people are using email or other technology to throw out a sales pitch, right, which I think is completely inappropriate. So for me, it's about the relationship and then using it to help further the sales process appropriately.
Right. And when you're on Anthony's site, you know what to expect when you get that newsletter.
That's right.
You know, he discloses what he's going to talk about, and that's exactly what he does. And Anthony, you're very consistent. I can depend on every Sunday morning getting that email from you, and that's powerful.
Yeah, from my perspective,
I think that's part of a good content strategy is the consistency and the expectation.
Exactly.
Well, and you know what? You're so right about that, because I've counseled some customers to just take the social buttons off the website, because it's like you haven't written a blog in 3 years.
Yeah.
You haven't, nobody's tweeted on behalf of your company in over a year and a half. Don't have it even on the website to make it look like you're social. It's almost worse to have that
right
than nothing at all.
Right. I think that all these things can be accelerators for us, and they're accelerators for a sales team. That's what I noticed. And the thing that I say the most about the experience that I've had with this, which culminated in a pretty large sale for me, was that I just got it done a lot faster than what it would have gotten done if I had gone the old pick and shovel route of trying to build those relationships over the phone, through a lunch, etc.
Yeah, pretty large deal. I'd say $47 million is a pretty darn large deal, buddy.
Okay, I'm just being humble.
We just did our version of the social selling Shark Tank, and Sander was one of our contestants, and he did a fabulous job. We reviewed everybody's videos, but yeah, $47 million deal, folks, using social as part of his process. Pretty impressive.
Right. Now, that was B2B. I just want to, you know, make sure that people understand that.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if there's any B2C that's happened that way, but I doubt it. But anyway, very, very interesting case study. And that was – I'll share a link on the show notes about that case study.
Yeah, too. I think you should. But you know what? This social works for B2C, maybe not in that kind of number.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a very large specialty furniture company in Houston.
Okay.
Anybody who's in Houston has to go check out Mattress Mac and his gang. The company is called Gallery Furniture. It is unlike anything you've ever seen. It's almost like a theme park for furniture. It's just impressive. And Mac's a visionary. 2 years ago, he gave all his salespeople iPads on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. And then they were queuing in information to customers into Salesforce. And they ratcheted it up last year. We worked with them. And they took their social activity to a whole nother level. So, I mean, they're a great story of how they really integrated social into not just the marketing side of the business, but their actual folks on the sales floor who are selling. It's pretty cool.
Wow, that's really great. And they encouraged their customers, I assume, to give them feedback through the social channels.
Well, they did. And one of the other things that was kind of fun is they were, you know, isn't it funny how when you're outside something, you see it and you go, well, that's just obvious and it's not a revolutionary idea. But I had them do things even like start taking pictures.
Right.
With the customer who's not ready to buy. Send them a text with the pictures and say, hey, this furniture would look great in your house. Or when they're buying and they're checking out and they're super happy, do a little video testimonial.
Right.
And that, in the past year, their engagement has just gone through the roof. It's been fabulous to watch.
Yeah. It's amazing how pictures and video will emotionally strike a chord with people when they see it on a site. Makes a big difference.
You bet. Well, and think about it. You go looking at furniture, it's like looking at houses. After a while, you just can't even remember what you just looked
right.
at.
One bed looks right? like the other.
So visual really helps.
Exactly. All right. So, Anthony, let's get to the nitty gritty of this. And I think, talking about social selling, you've got a lot of business owners out there that are struggling right now and really having a hard time. What do you think is causing that right now? Besides the economy, besides, you know, we have all these tools to use.
The economy's great. Yeah. So anybody that says otherwise isn't paying attention. Corporate balance sheets are now at record highs. They've never been higher. So there's plenty of money on the table. And we live in a $16 trillion economy. So the money is not an issue. I think it's the approach. And I think any time that you give a sales organization the new shiny object, they're expecting the results to be magical, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to start a website. We're going to put a blog up in Facebook. And then all of a sudden, people are going to beat a path to our door. And that hasn't come true for anybody that I know. It takes a lot more work and effort. And we call it social media marketing for a reason. It's because it has to be done like marketing, which means there needs to be a thoughtful effort put into the content that's developed. It needs to reach our customers where they live and resonate with them. And we've got to have some value proposition that makes sense for the people that we're trying to pursue. And so much of what we do doesn't look like that. So I'll tell you one of the things that I've done with my own company and with clients to help make a difference for them is to think of social media as a campaign. So it's not LinkedIn by itself that's going to get you there. It's connecting with people on LinkedIn, in a group, making a contribution, sharing your insights and ideas, making connections with people. And then it's making connections through Twitter. And then it's making connections through the blog and through an email newsletter. And it's thinking about sending videos through something like VSnap, where you send a custom video with a message directly to your customer. And it's linking all of these together in a form of a campaign. So it's warmer than that cold call that you pick up the phone and you call somebody who's not expecting the call and that's a stranger. It's building these relationships and building the path in front of that so people recognize who you are, they recognize the value that you create, and they're open to having that conversation with you. And that might be, I don't know, but that might be Sandra's experience, is that that's what it was. It was a number of touches, a number of different ways that allows the client to say yes to that first opportunity.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree, and I think that's the challenge now is to get this down to people. I mean, even when you talk to people who are in the buying phase and in the buyer's roles, they're confused as to how they're supposed to get the information that they need to make a decision on behalf of the company. So they're defaulting in many cases back to a social world and looking at the things that the places where they're hanging out in social to figure that out. And I think, you know, from my perspective, and the aha that's come from all this is really that we're on the cusp of this information age where all this stuff is available to us. But the problem is that many of our hierarchies and many of our companies are still set up in a very much in a command and control, something that harkens back to, say, the Industrial Revolution. I think it's quickly changing, but I think many of the large businesses that are out there are still grappling with this. And I think that there's going to be explosive growth and change in this area. And I think that for the very reasons that you're mentioning.
Well, and I love what Anthony said because it drives me insane. There are no quick fixes, folks.
Right.
There's no quick fix. You know, one connection over LinkedIn does not mean you're going to close a $1 million deal. I've not seen it yet. And but isn't that the basics of great selling anyway? I mean, when did you meet somebody in person one time and get a $47 million deal? It doesn't happen.
Or even a $5,000 deal or a $1,000 deal.
No, and so I think Anthony's right on. And in some ways, I think these organizations need to learn to change what they measure, right? Because, social does work, but it does take a strategy and a concerted effort and that consistency. You don't need every tool out there. You have to think about, I know this is a radical thought, where is your customer likely to be, right, and spend time there. But it does take a little bit of time, but I don't see that as, you know, isn't that the problem with sales training in general, though? You know, companies bring somebody in because there's a revenue problem, and they do a sales training, and everybody's all excited, and 30 days later they don't see anything. And they say it didn't work, but, you know, it's like any strategy. How are you carrying that forward consistently so it becomes a habit for people?
Right. So, Anthony, question for you. Have you ever had, a business owner or somebody higher up in a organization, C-suite, say, well, we don't want to give all of our secrets away online?
Everybody. It's amazing. You know, I even had a consultant call me and say, you know, you're doing this wrong. And he called me bad names and he said, you know, you're giving away your intellectual property and you don't give your intellectual property away. You make people pay for that intellectual property and you just continually blast it out there and you're making a mistake. And by the way, how are you getting all these clients?
Yeah.
Hello.
And I said, never mind.
Yeah.
You're not going to get it anyway. Because the content is easy. It's the execution that people pay you for. It's for getting them the result.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's the part that people don't understand. Your ideas are probably already known anyway.
Right.
It's probably not a great secret, but you and your insight and how to execute that and take responsibility for that outcome is what makes the difference, and that's what you're going to get paid for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We can all go into this hoping that we're going to be blogging every single day, but come January 15th, I'd probably find a reason to not blog that day, Anthony, to, you know, just using you as an example there.
Right. Well, I don't drink alcohol, though, and I haven't since 1992, so January 1's easy for me to blog because
that's right.
My night was easier and I went to bed earlier.
That's so funny.
Yep. So, Barb, you know, you talked about sales skills a few minutes ago, and how do people, is it a learned thing, these sales skills, you know? I think a lot of people hide behind technology because maybe they don't have the sales skills.
Well, I think, you know, personally, I feel like sales skills, good sales skills are on the decline. You know, if you take a look at, there are very few universities that offer any kind of courses and degrees in selling,
right
as a professional discipline. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how well most organizations are doing onboarding new sales folks into the organization and then giving them some real training and process. Mm-hmm. You know, my experience through the years when I was still in corporate was, you know, they just sort of tagged you up with somebody who was a good salesperson. So I might come in and they say, well, we want you to hang with Sander for a while. And that was my sales training, right? Or the emphasis is on the product and the service. So the emphasis is on training and the features. Would you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree with this.
Right? And not so much on the actual process of selling. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there are people who are good relationship builders naturally, but you also have to learn a process that you follow on a pretty consistent basis. And so I do think people are hiding behind technology.
Yeah.
The messages, the phone calls, they're horrible. And you just say to yourself, is anyone paying attention to how these folks are representing their companies?
Right. But, you know, and Anthony, this, I'm going to throw this back over to you. Can good sales skills be learned? Obviously, I can read your blog, and you give out some great, great tips on closing sales and pricing. Can that be learned?
Of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just wrote a post for Chris Brogan for Owner Magazine today about why you want to be Peyton Manning. And it looks, when you see talented people, and Manning's certainly one of them, it looks like they were born to do it. And certainly there are some people born with the ability to generate rapport and create relationships, and they're just born with that ability. But I think now what's changed so much in this age that we live in and what we expect from salespeople is business acumen and accountability and leadership skills and change management skills. And all of that can be learned. And closing can be learned. And good prospecting skills can be learned. It can all be learned. I worry about one thing that Barb talked about. You used to be paired up with people that were in your role who were successful. One of the things that I think that is a challenge for young salespeople coming in, and I know that they like social and they're pretty good at that skill set at some level, is in the old days when you went to work as a salesperson, you would work in a bullpen with a bunch of other salespeople, and so you were always together talking and sharing. Mm-hmm. And now so many people in B2B and so many entrepreneurs are working out of their homes, right. So you're just never around that conversation. You're not hearing the other language that is effective. You're not hearing the stories about what works and what doesn't work, and we're so isolated now. Even though we're better connected, we're isolated from a lot of our peers, and so we're missing some of that. And we used to get it through osmosis. We're not giving them those skills anymore, and I think that needs to be rethought. Clearly, we have the toolkit in video conferencing and Google Hangouts. I have clients who I talk to only on Skype because it allows us to be face-to-face. But I think we need to rethink how are we going to get them the skills, because what we're doing doesn't seem to be working.
I would agree with that. When I started in Chicago, it was sitting on a long bench with about five other people who each have varying degrees and experience in sales. We all had split up the Chicagoland phone book and we were cold calling. But you would hear, as you were trying to give your pitch over the phone to whoever you were talking to, you heard the person next to you saying, you know, something similar to you. And you were always like kind of improving your pitch. And I guess I'm going to throw this question out, if you don't mind, Desiree, but
yeah.
My question is, so that obviously that's a bygone era for the most part. I mean, cold calling, I think we can talk about that, but has its place, but maybe not so much anymore. The question is, with all these, this new media and these new ways of selling, how can people get that type of experience of that workbench in Chicago that I was talking about.
I would say Google Hangouts.
Well, I think Anthony made a great suggestion. And one of the things that always bothered me about just teaming somebody up with other people in the organization, they might be successful, but maybe they're not. I mean, maybe there's some habits that person's going to pick up that you really don't want them to learn from that, from that industry.
No doubt, that's true.
Right? So, I mean, I really think companies need to start organizing training for folks as they're coming in. Mm-hmm. Definitely different than in my day. I grew up in a military family, and my parents taught me how to communicate well with people, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure the kids coming into the workforce are getting that same level of education and support that maybe all of us got.
So
they are learning how to cuss with great effectiveness over the Xbox, though, I can assure you.
Yeah, and abbreviate everything, right?
Right. And even if they were in a bullpen together, they're all texting. They're not talking to each other.
I know. That's true. So you mentioned cold calling, Sander. And it got really cold in here. Let's talk about cold calling. Well, is it dead?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I honestly think it's dead. I'll put a stake in the ground, and I'd like to hear what everyone else thinks.
Okay.
But I think that there's no real purpose behind it anymore because people, number one, they're going to not pick up the phone as much as they used to. When I was in Chicago, I mean, you'd actually get people. Now, I think you still can get people, but it's an infinitesimal lower number of people you're going to reach, and that's why things like predictive dialers are out there and all this other kind of great technology to harass people. But I just believe that really there should be no point in having that cold call anymore. Every call should be at least somewhat warm, where somebody's in some way experienced something about your product or service through the various methods that we're talking about here in social selling. And I will say I was at a business, not AT&T's, where someone was giving cold call lessons and talking about the old lessons of cold calling. And frankly, they were still pretty good lessons. It took me back to the day and the age, but I just don't think it's needed anymore. And I was talking to a young woman the other night, and she was saying that, that's what she does for a living. She calls people up and tries to get them on the phone and pitch her services. And I looked at her and I was astounded that that's still being done. So I'm just wondering, I mean, are you seeing that as well, Barb, that people are still cold calling?
Well, a lot of people are still doing it, and, and arguments wage over the terminology. I mean, right, because technically, if you call someone you don't know them, it's cold. Can we agree to that?
Right.
Okay, we get that, right? Yeah. But I think that if you can use technology and information to sort of warm up whatever that conversation is going to be, that's always helpful. My friend Trish Bertuzzi, I like what she says. It isn't the call that's dead. It's the cold piece of it.
Oh, right.
I like that.
Okay. The phone is still a very important and viable sales technology, right?
Right, right.
But to engage in that conversation. But if it looks like the old smile and dial days where you're just trying to call people and like, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm going to be in your area on Thursday. Can I get a meeting? You're like, really? Why?
And that happens to me all the time. I get those calls, and it's just like, and what's worse are the spam emails from people in my industry trying to sell me web design. I'm like, what? Are you kidding? Did you not do your homework?
No, they don't do the homework, and they don't personalize it. I mean, Anthony mentioned that in the very beginning, and I'm very big on that. You have to customize the message based on who you're reaching out to, whether it's verbally or making the phone call. So that's my opinion. Phone calling is important in selling. Randomly calling strangers with a generic pitch, I think that's over.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. So let's talk now about measurement. Obviously, companies measure effectiveness of their sales team through the dollars that come in. But I think that a lot of business owners and C-suite struggle with the fact that there is no tangible measurement for what comes in from social media, except for Sander here, who can obviously measure that big $47 million win. Although I think your steps to that, it was many. It wasn't just LinkedIn. It wasn't just one thing. So talk to me about measurement. Barb, go ahead and start that conversation. How do you How do you produce ROI and say that that was from social?
Well, a couple things. One on the measurement. I mean, speaking to the cold calling, I think that's why a lot of organizations still are doing it, because they can measure that activity, and so they perceive that activity as being one that's going to lead to a sales result.
Right.
Okay. I personally think it's more effective to target 25, 50 of the right people, craft a relevant message, and then reach out versus just calling, calling, calling. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, a lot
I use the number 60, Barb.
You do? Tell me why you use 60.
60 just seems to be about the right number that you can effectively manage and build a campaign around.
Yeah, so do you agree with what I'm saying, that a lot of management are still kind of measuring people on the calls made and focusing more on that activity versus the quality of it?
Absolutely, and I think mostly it's even gone further the other direction, where people are so afraid of being a micromanager, they don't manage activity at all, and they don't really understand that what comes into the pipeline is what comes out the other end, and so they don't focus enough on what comes in. But I think 60, what I find is salespeople know who the 60 accounts that they should be calling on are in their territory, but they avoid them because they already have a supplier and they're difficult and they're going to take a long time. And so they try to find somebody who's easier. And by easier, what they really mean is receptive. So they move downstream to somebody who's happier to talk to them, but probably isn't going to be a great opportunity long term. And I think we know who those targets are. And your point about whether it's 50 or 60, or depending on the industry, some other number, it's the right choice is to say, we're going to go after them and we're going to show up with a message that's going to resonate with these people, because we're right for them and they're right for us. I call them dream clients. They're the people that you can create breathtaking, earth-shattering, jaw-dropping value for, and who are going to let you capture some of the value you create. But those are the only place where we should all really play.
Yeah, I agree. Sander, measurement. I mean, you know, obviously you had the win, but were you able to show that it was directly related to the social setup that you had?
Yeah, I mean, my case was a bit of a special one, because this customer, by all measurement internal to our company, was dead to us.
Yeah.
We just weren't getting where we needed to get to with them. And that was part of the reason that I took it on. And it wasn't completely by luck that I got involved with this. This was something that I wanted to do. It was something I was purposeful about the day I came in. But I will say that I did put a lot of my chips on that one red space, saying that we're going to do this by social or it's not going to get done. And there were times that I started worrying about whether that was the right approach. And I would go back to, well, maybe I should just send more emails or make more phone calls. But what I noticed was that all of that still resulted in the same thing, where I was getting nothing back from the client. And there were a lot of things, to Anthony's point, where we could really change the game for this particular client. There was a lot of areas where we could bring technology to them from AT&T that would change their business and the way things were done for them. So we just kept going after it, and we stayed on target on 10 things that we were trying to get with them on, and looking at customers inside this Fortune 87 that would consume those 10 things. So as far as measurement goes, though, being able to connect the dots, I think there's no question that this made a huge difference in the relationship. But it is very, very difficult along the way to say, well, geez, that, you know, did somebody read that? You know, there's ways of finding out these types of things, but it's really hard to say. I mean, did somebody just open that browser up and then quickly go someplace else? Did they click it by mistake? You know, so it's really, really tough to get to those parts. And that's why, from my perspective, I just like trying to measure it by, can we sell something? And I don't know. I'm game. I guess maybe I had a lucky hit here. But I think that it's the right measurement to try to just go after increasing and accelerating sales.
Well, and I think there are other things you can measure. You can measure net new meetings. You can ask people how they found you or why they wanted to have a conversation with you. You can measure referrals that come to you as a result of, you know, working in your social networks or just networking externally.
Right.
You can measure things like, the expansion of your external connections with the right level of decision maker in an organization.
Right.
So, you know, is it a perfect science? No, but let's take technology completely out of the picture. Let's assume we don't have anything but phones and fax machines. And how did we measure whether or not our activities were leading to sales? in that case.
Yeah.
I still know a lot of people who go to networking events, but they go to all the wrong events. And then they kind of fool themselves thinking that, you know, that activity is going to lead to something,
That's
right?
That's true. That is so true.
So I really do think each organization, business or sales team, they need to think about what their end goal is, what that outcome is. And then, I don't know, call me crazy, but, you know, as people come to you, ask, how did you hear of me? I mean, it's not always, I don't think it's, it hasn't for me anyway, it's not always linear.
Right.
You know, the Harvard Business Review article, which, you know, the editors approached me on Twitter to write it. When I asked how they found me, because I was just dumbfounded, they said, oh, well, a couple of our salespeople heard you on a webinar. Then they went and signed up for the newsletter. Mm-hmm. Then we started paying attention to what you're doing on LinkedIn. So yeah. I think it's there seems to be a tendency with social to try and force this like straight line, and mm-hmm. I just don't believe it happens that way.
So question for you. I mean, a business owner, should they be building a body of work online, and should they encourage their salespeople, if they have a team, to do so for themselves?
I can't wait to hear what everybody else says. But I think, yes, and to the point made earlier, you know, in the sales role that you have, you may not be able to. But if it's a smaller business mm-hmm. and you don't have the luxury of relying on a marketing team to be creating your content, mm-hmm. I think you have to do something. Even if it's, you know, I think about my good friend and colleague, Todd McCormick, who's now over at Silver Pop. You know, they started with their sales organization. They did what they called Blog Tuesday. A blog was queued up that went out by Todd, and every Tuesday, the whole sales team made a concerted effort to share that content. That's just how they got themselves started. So
right.
I think it's important. Content sells. You know, Anthony and Sandra made the point earlier. I believe it. Give to receive. Give valuable content that educates and, you know, helps them think about maybe business issues in new ways. All of that leads them to want to come back to do business with you, I think.
Right. Anthony, so when you're counseling business owners, what do you tell them?
I think they have to have the content, and mm-hmm. This sort of takes us back to the first comment I made. I think that it matters that the content help the buyer wherever we find the buyer. And I hear so many salespeople say, you know, I want ready-to-buy leads. You know, they want the lead to be in a position where all they have to do is hand over a contract and the lead says yes. And that's never happened, and it's not going to happen. That's why we're called salespeople, because we have to do something. And we take them where we find them. If they're not dissatisfied and they're out looking at you because a salesperson's reached out to them, they should find dissatisfaction. They should find the way that you help them move their business forward from wherever they are. And if they are dissatisfied, you should have content that helps them say, here's how you might think about what you need to do, and how you might evaluate your needs, and how, if you were going to look at us, how you would be confident that you're going to get those things. I think that content has to exist, because you've got to serve the buyer where they live right now, and that's where they live. They're looking, but they're not looking. I know I hear this, well, buyers are doing, you know, they're 67% through the buying process, or 77%, or 177%, or whatever number people want to come up with. I don't know any buyer who's sitting around researching. If you reach out to them and you point them at something, they might take a look, but it needs to serve them where they are in the process. So you need to think about that content in that way. How does it help them where they are? How does it help them connect with you and see you as the solution to helping them move down that path and come to a good decision?
I would just agree. I'd quickly jump in. I would agree with Barb and Anthony on this case. Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to be creating this, and I think what we're bumping up against here, and, you know, coming from the sales side of this thing, is the sales versus marketing, and who's creating this, and what are they trying to do. I propose, because I've been through this in an organic way, that it needs really to have a driver that comes from the sales side. So Barb and Anthony were talking about that 60 people or so that you can manage. That's got to come directly from the sales team as to who they're trying to get with and what they're trying to do. Now, when it comes to how you get a hold of those people and hang out where they live or where they're at on the buying process, that's going to require close coordination with the sales team in order to figure out what kind of content is the right kind of content for those people to consume and come closer to you.
But how do you figure out where they live? You guys have all brought that up. how do you understand your customer? And in this day and age, nobody should be making a call or, you know, discussing sales with somebody before they do their homework.
Right.
But what's the most effective way to do that?
Well, I just know what I do, which is I think about, you know, who is the buyer I'm trying to reach? And I sort of, you know, define their demographic, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting that you raise that point, Desiree, because I've been at events where I'm speaking, I'm talking, and I'll say, okay, somebody in the audience, define your ideal customer for me. And you'll invariably get people who say, well, Barb, everyone can buy what I have to sell.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but good luck with that. Because when you try to market to everyone, you're marketing to nobody.
Right.
So I know for myself, and I think it's even more important in social, you have to understand who is the customer you're going after. I'll give you a great example. If you sell in the government space, with all due respect to LinkedIn, it's harder to reach government people through the LinkedIn network. It's not impossible, but I've done this for some customers who have sales teams that are focused on government as an industry.
Mm-hmm.
They struggle. Well, there's another networking site focused on government called govloop.net. It's like LinkedIn, but it's focused on government. So
great
I
tip.
Think you have to really be clear who the ideal customer is and sort of what the demographic makeup is of that customer, and then you'll determine what tools will help you. You know, I told you this last year when we were at an event, everybody was all worked up over Pinterest.
Yeah.
Okay, Pinterest is an awesome tool.
Mm-hmm.
But unless your audience is 90% women and mm-hmm. you're selling wedding and retail and, you know,
crafts,
hospitality
yeah.
supplies,
yeah.
maybe have a presence if you want to understand it, but you're kidding yourself if you think you're going to make money through that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the thing that's so important about these technologies. They help serve a purpose, but they are not... You know, they're not the thing that's going to necessarily do the selling.
Yeah, exactly.
And why waste time in all these other areas? I mean, it's hard enough to pay attention to this stuff. And you got to be focused.
Yeah.
So that's my take on it.
Anthony, what about you?
I think you kind of have to be everywhere. And I'm noticing more and more that we don't get to determine our clients' communication preferences. So some of them love the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got a client who's 50 years old, and he loves text messaging. That's his primary form of communication. He loves it.
How'd you figure that out, Anthony? Did he just start texting you or say, text me? What signals did you hear?
He started texting me all the time.
Okay.
And so it's interesting. I had to ask him, how did you come to be a 50-year-old guy who uses text as his primary form of communication?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't really know. I just like it. And I said, let me guess, you've got teenage kids. He said, yeah, I got a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old. It's the only way I ever get to talk to them. And then I knew they trained him. And I asked him, they trained you, right? He said, absolutely, they trained me. And it's a, you know, I wouldn't prefer that. I would rather call him because I'm a phone guy.
Yeah.
But he likes text, so it's text. So if they live on Twitter, that's where they live. And if they live on blog posts or on LinkedIn, that's where we go to find them. I think you kind of have to have I think of this as a campaign. So go where they are and have a campaign so you've got a presence everywhere, and wherever you get them, connect with them and then try to drag them through that process by creating value. So here's something you can look at. Here's something that answers a question. And I think Sanders said it, just try to be helpful along that path for them.
Well, I'm really glad Anthony brought that up, actually, because as much as I love social, it makes me insanely crazy when people try to direct message me through Twitter.
Oh, or Facebook.
I hate that. That's not how I want to communicate.
Yeah.
Anthony is so right. So, I mean, I think it's important that you participate where you know your customer's likely to be. And also when you're thinking about how you want to communicate with them, you have to communicate in the way they want, not the way you want.
But doesn't that force salespeople to have to be everywhere? Like Anthony said, you have to be everywhere to make sure you don't miss something.
Well, I don't disagree, but again, my example with Pinterest,
mm-hmm.
if you're a salesperson selling B2B mm-hmm. in a complex technology industry, I'm pretty sure you don't need to waste any
no.
time on Pinterest.
I agree.
Yeah, for me, and this is sort of fits in with what everyone's been saying, it's like this 3 degrees of Kevin Bacon-ness. But I think you got to go like maybe just 1 degree. So for the people who I couldn't figure out where these people live, why they weren't obviously connecting with me through Twitter directly, or I couldn't figure out, you know, what they did a whole lot on LinkedIn. I mean, I tried to go to where their groups were, the things that they were doing in the groups that they belonged to. But I also tried to get more general. If I knew that they were in the marketing space and I knew it was, a transportation vertical. I looked for those kinds of places. And on top of just looking to hang out in those places and posting useful and interesting information, I also tried to figure out who were the thought leaders in those groups. So who were the people who were talking, and why not connect with those people and see what their network looked like. And in many cases, their network extended to the people that I was interested in, which was an interesting finding from my perspective.
So let's talk about the future of sales and where it's going. It's going to change, right? I mean, who wants to tackle that one?
Well, let Anthony go first.
All I can tell you, I think, is that it's going to continue on a long trend line that it's been following for some time, and that is salespeople are going to need greater business acumen. And by that, I mean they're going to need greater experience and greater situational knowledge. They're going to need to understand how to help their clients. It's the most important thing is, how do I create value for them? And so that's going to continue to be more and more demanding on the sales rep and on the sales organization to prepare that salesperson to create that value. I think they're going to need even greater change leadership skills, because they're going into their prospective clients who are deeply entrenched in the status quo, and anything that they come up with looks like more work and change and risk and fear. They're going to need more leadership skills, and they're going to need to be more accountable for results. So we've got greater demands, but it's been going this direction for a long time. I think it's getting faster. Right now, all the rage in sales is challenger sale and insight, and I don't really think people understand what insight means. Insight is when you're struck like a bolt out of the blue with some new idea that's valuable because you have so much experience and so much knowledge in some area that it just hits you. What we're really selling is business acumen and a value proposition that we can teach and explain, because some of what we do is so hard to explain. But that's really what's going to be the hurdle for salespeople, is their ability to act like a good general manager and a business person, and to think about their clients' problems as if they were the one responsible for solving them, because at some level they are going to be the one responsible for solving those problems.
That's a good point. I mean, I see business people like myself, entrepreneurs, as becoming more educators, you know, teachers. And we use our blog and our posts to support that, to create that content that actually teaches. Barb, you're a teacher. You know, Sander, I think you're a teacher as well. And Anthony, you too. Let's talk about that. Barb, you've got a book and...
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with Anthony more. And I think although challenger sale is taking a lot of heat, people want to argue about whether or not the research was valid and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that it's kind of like the whole argument over cold calling. The bigger point is being missed.
Right.
We need to, as sales advisors, need to be able to push our customers to think a little bit differently, because, as Anthony said, they're entrenched in their own world, and I even remember my Microsoft days. You just get so caught up in your own industry, in your own company.
Right.
You don't have the benefit of maybe seeing things from a broader perspective. But I do think that if you're not getting the education in your own organization, you need to seek it out yourself, because increasingly every survey that comes out, customers say that the top salespeople are the ones who listen, mm-hmm. who really understand the needs, who take the time to do the homework, who will share frustrations, perspectives and insights that they couldn't necessarily find on their own, right? And I also think that it's going to become more and more important. In fact, Sandra and I were talking about this a few minutes before the show started. You have to care about how your product or service impacts that business and everything else they've invested in. Right? In other words, you can't just sell in some, I don't think. You just sell something in, you hope it works, and you don't have any... You don't care whether or not it impacts anybody else, you know, in the organization. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I happen to disagree with some folks who say that most of us will be gone by 2020. I don't think that's true.
No, I don't either. Because there's still the human element that's necessary order for the sales transaction to take place.
Well, and usually they'll kick around the example of Amazon. But I think, I think you can buy books pretty easily on your own.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you're selling a complex technology right. that you are going to just do it going through a website.
Or a service.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that the customers are going to change all this for us.
Sure.
And I think that they are. The first thing they're doing is they don't answer the phone a whole lot. And the second thing they do is they don't read many of your emails either. I think, you know, notwithstanding some of the things that Barb and Anthony said, which you have to make sure you have a very targeted message for, in order to get readership there. But I just think that what will happen is that they're going to be voting with their feet, and we're just going to need to change in a way that supports them and that gives them what they're looking for, the information that they need, and do that in a way that's relevant to them. There was a customer I spoke to just this weekend, and she said to me, she goes, you know, the person who's going to get my business is the one who's easiest to do business with. So I think that speaks to volumes to what we're doing here.
Well,
so,
you know, and yeah. Brian Salas talked about that at the conference, and yeah. I have just been reading his book voraciously.
Yeah.
So I've always believed it, but now my passion has ratcheted up a whole nother notch. Companies need to think about the overall experience that buyer goes through instead of us always trying to force them through a path, right? Because it fits the way the company's always done certain things.
Right, right.
A lot's going to change, and, you know, some people will weather that change and some won't.
Right, yep, like anything. All right, Anthony, tell our audience how they can find you and what you're working on right now.
I'm working on all kinds of things.
I'm
at thesalesblog.com, and right now you'll find my Leading Value webinar series there that you can sign up for, which will be every Friday for the next 3 or 4 weeks. And you can also find my speaking calendar and, most importantly, sign up for the newsletter.
Perfect. I'm going to agree with you on that, definitely. It's a do-not-miss newsletter. Barb, what are you working on?
Book number 2.
Yes.
Yes. So I finally got the draft all laid out. And mm-hmm. so really working on getting that done. So, you know, if people want to visit and learn more, they can visit at the web, scs-connect.com, about what we do.
Okay.
And I'm also personally excited because my brother and I are going to take a trip to Germany over the holidays. And
that's
I am,
right.
like, so excited about this because I love travel anyway. And I've not seen Germany yet. So I'm just excited about spending 2 weeks there. So that's what's going on with me.
Very, very exciting.
Yeah.
I find sometimes when you travel, too, you get some of your best ideas when you're away.
Well, we could have another show and talk about how I think every person as part of their education growing up should be required to travel internationally. It really does broaden.
Absolutely.
It does broaden your perspective. It's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. yeah. And Sander, what are you working on?
I've come prepared this time. The best way to reach me is through LinkedIn, or to check me out on AT&T's blog Networking Exchange. The other thing I will tell you is that I'm going to be doing a guest lectureship down at Georgia State University with some of the kids there, talking about what it means to be a salesperson. So if you need some hilarity in your life, please come out. It'll be on the 4th of November.
Wow.
Well, thanks for reminding me that people can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm sure they can, Barb.
Barbara Giamacco. Fortunately for me, nobody else has that last name.
That's right.
We're all three of us lucky with our indistinct names.
That's right. That's right.
The truth. Well, thank you, everyone, for being on the show. It was great. I learned some wonderful insights. And Anthony, thanks for calling in today. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And for this week, this is Desiree Scales with High Velocity, Business Radio X. Have a great week.